Because, again, you know, this is standard knowledge, standard science that is meant to be understood and put into practice by every single member of our society. And this is meant to be the curriculum, actually, that we introduce in our Vedic educational institutions. So, of course, the same theme as we mentioned a little earlier, and the same scene also, just to remind us. And just to put in perspective, this is a very interesting presentation, actually, from the Kautilya Arthashastra. We mentioned these four, of course. But I'm just giving the Sanskrit name, Science of Philosophy, Anvikshiki, Science of Education, Trayi, Science of Politics, Dandaniti, and the Science of Economics, or Vaishyas, Bharata. These are these standard sciences that make up what one studies in traditional education, traditional Vedic education, or Gurukula, isn't it? And this is what also should be introduced in our Varnashram colleges, if we ever get around to establishing them. So what is the science of philosophy, Vedic philosophy? It is divided into three. The first is called Sankhya. We are familiar with Sankhya. It's in the Bhagavad Gita. It is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Kapila is the propounder of the Sankhya philosophy. So it essentially means, you know, the knowledge from the Bhagavatam. Sankhya is the first of three. Second is yoga. Yoga, of course, Bhagavad Gita speaks of yoga, and the highest form of yoga is bhakti yoga, correct? Third is tarka. A debate on philosophy. And there are two additional references. I'm just adding them here. I mentioned already what is called the Dasamula Tattva from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which speaks about Tattva, and also a very important reference by Srila Jiva Goswami that speaks about Tattva in the Sat Sandarbhas. Of course, as devotees, you know, one of our main, you know, every day when we attend Bhagavatam class, we hear philosophy and we hear about these different subject matters. So we don't need to spend that much time, maybe in this whole section. Whether we'll finish before 12:30, we'll have to see. But I'm going to go quickly over these, especially regarding Sankhya, which is basically what the Srimad Bhagavatam is all about. And as I mentioned, because we read this on a regular basis, so this is where Shukadeva Goswami explains that in the Srimad Bhagavatam there are 10 divisions, 10 topics, which we study on a regular daily basis. And these are the first five tattvas. Again, you know, first canto, second canto, etc., like that, deal with these different topics. And these are the other five cantos of the Bhagavatam, isn't it? So we know actually that our acharyas have especially focused, including our own Srila Prabhupada, on these subject matters because they cover all kinds of topics, and therefore we'll just skip over all of these because they're all there in the Bhagavatam. And I just want to come to some of the key verses. So I'm just skipping these here. Again, as devotees, because those who attend Bhagavatam class, we can't miss these, some of these key verses from the first canto of the Bhagavatam. It speaks about dharma. And again, you know, dharma very much needs to be understood on these two levels that we spoke about, material and spiritual for dharma. Another important verse from the seventh canto, and I would like to mention those who are, especially householders, should study not only this verse, but a whole series of verses from the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. The last five chapters are especially dealing with the whole concept of Varnashrama Dharma, as presented by Narada Muni. So this, to help us get a little glimpse, okay, although bhakti is above Varnashrama, but Varnashrama can be seen as a tool or a means by which we can, actually one statement made by Srila Prabhupada, that in order to become Vaishnavas, Prabhupada actually made this statement, it's possibly somewhere in one of these presentations, in order to become Vaishnavas, it will be easier for us to become Vaishnavas by practicing Varnashrama Dharma. That's the statement made by Prabhupada. So we all know about dharma. Dharma can be either motivated or unmotivated, isn't it? So when dharma is motivated, then it's for some material purpose. And that material purpose can be sanctioned or authorized, like those who worship demigods in the Bhagavad Gita. It is authorized because gradually one who follows the Vedas will become purified and one day will be able to come to the platform of unmotivated activity or unalloyed devotion, which, as we know, is the three divisions given in the Bhagavad Gita. Karma, when we follow the Vedas. When we don't follow the Vedas, it is vikarma, isn't it? And when we are fortunate to come after being purified to understand or accept devotional service, then we come to akarma or naishkarma, isn't it? Artha, also, either we can... artha is not a bad thing in itself. Artha means some basic needs, material needs are there, and to fulfill those basic needs, one has to do something. When it is for sense gratification, then it is motivated. Same thing with kama. There is this very important verse, sarva kama dugamahi, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, whereby Srila Prabhupada translates kama in that verse as basic necessities of life. So that, of course, in that context, is the concept of yukta vairagya. And then moksha, for ordinary people, means just liberation or merging, but for devotees, of course, means bhakti or devotional service. And, of course, philosophy is not usually the favorite topic of most people, because philosophy in Kali Yuga is like not so easy. But the important point about this presentation and this first of four sciences is that we cannot understand the other three sciences, science of, you know, kshatriyahood, brahmana, or the science of knowledge or education, or the science of politics and the science of economics, without having a basic understanding of these philosophical points that are presented. And once again, because as devotees, we study these, and someone was just mentioning, I think in Mayapur, I think it was Vaisheshika Prabhu, from California was giving the Bhagavatam class, I think just yesterday in Mayapur. He was mentioning the point that recently he started to visit corporates and meet with people in the corporate world. And he was mentioning the point that, you know, some of the very basic things, like the five basic concepts introduced in the Bhagavad Gita, ordinary people, they don't know these things. You know, it's like a revelation. We take it for granted. Oh, yeah, yeah, Ishvara, you know, Jiva. But for ordinary people, of course, even for us, we don't know that there's a lot of subdivisions here that we'll cover in a few minutes. But these are like the four basic, you know, the foundation of knowledge in terms of philosophy that makes up the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. But these are totally unknown to the vast majority of people. What is, yeah, this is, gives us a little other dimension in terms of where these fit in terms of Bhagavat Tattva and Varnashrama Tattva. Or the naturally Ishvara is totally on the spiritual platform. Jiva has a mixture. If it is Baddha Jiv, we're connected with the modes of material nature. Those living entities in the spiritual world have nothing to do with the modes of material nature. Or those living entities in the spiritual world who have learned to transcend the modes of material nature, they're also on the spiritual or transcendental platform. Prakriti, of course, is connected with the modes of material nature, therefore connected with Varnashrama. It's very interesting, actually, somebody was asking, is Varnashram eternal? What would you answer if somebody asked you this question? Krishna is eternal. Living entity is eternal. Is Varnashram eternal? Yes or no? And why is it eternal? Because it's material, no? Huh? Because Krishna has established, yes. Yes. An easy way to understand it is that actually Varnashram is connected with Prakriti. Prakriti are material nature connected with the gunas, the three modes of material nature. And Prakriti is one of the four eternal principles. Therefore, Varnashram is also an eternal principle in the material world, of course. And it is the system, we can say par excellence, you know, the best system, as you pointed out, because it's given by Krishna. Therefore, it is that perfect system. Yeah. And then Kala, of course, in the spiritual world is eternal. Eternal time in the material world is past, present, and future. And karma, of course, is connected with Varnashrama Tattva. And just to move along here, in terms of Tarka, well, these are the three ways in which people generally get knowledge. Of course, devotees, we have a very unique and special way of acquiring knowledge. Pratyaksha is through sense perception. Anumana is through logic and inference. And then Sabdha Praman is what is recommended in the Vedic process or Vedic culture. And as we mentioned before, in modern day society, they simply rely on the first two, and therefore that is incomplete and imperfect. That's not so easy for ordinary people to accept, but this is the process that we are following. I'll just go over quickly, very interesting actually, what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur presents in his Dasamula Tattva. And those, keep in mind, are related with the three very essential basic principles of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Sambandha Gyan, meaning the science of relationship, and Abhideya, the science of activity, and then Prayojana, the goal or destination or the result, if we apply those properly. So the first of the ten tattvas actually is that all knowledge comes from the Vedas. That's established from the very beginning. Any knowledge which is not supported in the Vedas is not accepted as knowledge. So Vedas are our reference, our basis of understanding, our source of knowledge. And then there are three the following three tattvas refer to Sambandha. That's important. And then, of course, the other four will refer to Abhideya. And the last two will refer to... number 9 and 10 refer to Abhideya and Prayojana. So, this is the second tattva. Param tattva means Krishna as the origin and end of all things. And also, these are the expressions or terms used by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Shaktiman, that Krishna is the source of all energies. And third, he is Rasa Samudra, ocean of all of sweet mellows. And these are further divided, you know. I mean, philosophy, usually you get deeper and deeper, deeper levels. But I'm just giving the first, or the ten. And then the fifth has to do with actually the spirit soul or Atma. There are four aspects in terms of the Atma. Three in terms of Krishna that we're just seeing now, in terms of the Atma, and these are things that, you know, as devotees, at least basic understanding we should have. The first one, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamaya Vangsho, Jiva Jivaloke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatanayam, spirit soul is my eternal part and parcel. That is part of Sambandha. Some living entities are conditioned, Nityabada. And, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, other living entities are liberated, Nityamukta. And then the fourth aspect that he explains, aspect of Veda, Abheda. We are simultaneously the same in quality with Krishna, but different in quantity. So that takes us to the eighth tattva, and then the last two tattvas, number 9, Navavida Bhakti, the 9 process of devotional service, beginning with Shravanam, Kirtanam, up to Atmanivedanam, and then Prema, which is the Prayojana, or the destination. So, I don't think it's, well, I'll just bring it up on the screen here, just to show how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this Dasamula Tattva goes more into details regarding Ishvara and in terms of being the Param Tattva, but divided in these three divisions and the references there from the Srimad Bhagavatam, very famous verse that all devotees need to know so that we can properly quote when needed. And as Shaktiman, then the Lord has these three energies that we all are familiar with, Bahiranga Shakti, Antaranga Shakti, and Tatastha Shakti. And the last description in terms of Ishvara, Rasa Samudra, these are explained by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Again, things that devotees are familiar with. So no need to spend much time on that. And in terms of the Jiva, he goes into, well, that's in our Nectar Devotion, And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains more in detail about Nityabada, Nityamukta, and Beda Beda. Yeah. And we also know about the different divisions. These are all in, again, things that devotees hear about and study on a regular basis. And the last one, of course, being prema. Yeah. These are the divisions next that Srila Jiva Goswami gives. Very important. I mean, his most important literature work is the Satsandarbhas, and these also give us the following divisions in terms of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Again, things that one needs to spend time to go over and study. Yeah, these are the names of the different Sandarbhas. So this is a very quick and very broad overview of the philosophical aspect. And the more we understand these different aspects as given by in the Srimad Bhagavatam especially, and as commented upon and explained by our acharyas, then the more we'll be able to follow and understand what will be coming later. So it means that this afternoon our main focus will be on the second of the vidyas, which is the science of education, which means actually what brahmanas are meant to study and what ideally should be making up the curriculum in our educational institutions, which ideally should come as close as possible. We'll go into details in terms of identifying what we could refer to as the five foundational pillars of education. There are five basic concepts which are an integral part of Vedic education, which practically speaking are missing in modern day education. And that's why modern education is in trouble. I will not not necessary to go into that. These are the summary of what we find in Srila Jiva Goswami's Satsandarbha. And if anyone looks at these, then you can find out more about it. We have 10 minutes before the end of our morning session. If there's any comment or question, we can take. Otherwise, we can break. Mike can come here. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. This Kautilya's Arthashastra, you are mentioning, Maharaj.
Hmm?
These four vidyas from...
Yes, yes.
Kautilya.
Kautilya's Arthashastra. That's where I got this information.
Can you tell a little about what is that exactly?
Actually, the Kautilya Arthashastra is especially the information given for someone to become a Kshatriya. So in the beginning of that work, this is written by Chanakya Pandit, he gives an overview basically of these four aspects. Because as we know, in the Vedic culture, those who are Kshatriyas, they are meant to learn this basic philosophy. They are meant to know, because they will be governing society. So they are meant to know what is actually knowledge, what brahmanas do, because they will, they're meant to take guidance from the brahmanas. They're meant to know especially what is the science of economy, of economics rather, which is connected with land and cows. So the primary purpose of the Kautilya Arthashastra will cover some portions of that when we speak about the science of politics or the science of Kshatriyahood. What makes up, for example, there are seven constituents or seven aspects that will make a kingdom successful, or that will make, for those who are not having a kingdom but who have a company, those in our modern day times, in other words, the basic principles. And it's very interesting how people from India who go to the Western world, they carry some of these principles that are found in our Shastra, and they apply them in modern day life, and it works very well because those are basic principles. So we'll be covering that tomorrow, actually, more in detail. But the whole book in itself goes very much in detail on so many different aspects. How? What are the qualities? What are the mandatory or ideal qualities for one to be a king, for one to be a minister? What are the different aspects of establishing, for example, a kingdom or a village or building a fort? So many, it goes into all these details, many of which we may not find so relevant today because we're living in the cities. But again, knowing that we are living in an unnatural and unsustainable way, and really unsustainable lifestyle as well, and knowing that Srila Prabhupada has told us like 50 years ago, long time back, that actually this is not going to last, and that the more stable and more desirable way to live is what our Vedic culture is teaching us, then it is important for us to know what those standard, basic, foundational principles are. And to the extent that we can, many of those we can begin to apply even now in our present day life, but they will more easily or more fully be practical or applicable in a more rural setting. It's online, actually. If you Google, you can get, there are different versions there, but the entire text is online. You can download it, actually. Yeah.
One more thing was there, Manoj. About these four Vidyas, you mentioned that science of philosophy is first one.
Yes.
And other three are for Brahmana, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. So
yes.
This is must for all. You have written all Dvijas.
Ah.
So it is must for all the people.
Correct. Yes. The basic philosophy, in other words, the basic philosophy of life, because the three natural leaders in society are the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas. When those are in place, when such people are having these the qualities as described in our Shastra, then society can function properly. And our problem today is that we don't have these people in those positions. We don't have the natural leaders. These are the natural leaders in society. All of them, the Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, they are they can function independently. You see, that's one of the how to differentiate someone who is a leader or a follower. So by nature, Shudra means one who actually doesn't have the ability to be independent or to work independently. He has to work under someone. He has to depend on someone. It's not bad. It's not a bad thing per se or in itself. It's just the nature. We have different natures, you know. And in Kali Yuga, of course, it's very, very difficult to find natural leaders. But natural leaders can be created to some extent by proper association, by proper training, etc. And that's why Prabhupada spoke so much about the importance and the need for training and education. And training and education, especially in terms of these basic traditional concepts, principles, and values. I think that's a signal. some other activities. We have reached our closing time. We will begin the afternoon session, which, as I mentioned, will focus on the second of the Charvidyas, the science of knowledge or education, means for brahmanas. And that will begin at 2 o'clock, from 2 to 4 o'clock this afternoon. Thank you all very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna.